First thing I want to do is just to welcome and say hello to the more than 400 new masters that are in the room. Thank you for making some time for me. Now, as promised, I'm going to talk about consciousness and source viewpoint. In nature, tigers, lions, wolves are suited by their claws and their teeth and their strength to occupy the highest position on the food chain. And our hairless ape ancestors were hardly more than an item on the menu. And if you were an observer from another planet, who would you bet on to survive? I mean, the man creature can run fast, but not as fast as a lion or a tiger. And man has an opposable thumb, which he can use to pick up a stick, but a stick isn't much good against sharp claws or a pack of wolves. So as an outside observer, you probably wouldn't pick the man creature as the animal that would survive and that could survive climate change, fierce predators, and end up at the top of the food chain. But you see, the man creature has something stirring within him, an inner power that mimics, stores, and sorts, and then resorts successive impressions of existence. That's the beginning of human consciousness. And in its most basic configuration, consciousness is a simulation laboratory that imitates reality. And it is able to imagine things that don't exist in order to perform some function that it desires to perform. And if that function that it desires to perform is to justify its own actions, ego is born. And watch out. A lot of us have some pretty complex simulations running. Now, the same consciousness that can figure out how to tame beasts and create the wonders of the world can also create weapons of mass destruction. The darker aspects of consciousness have led the world into war more than once and have sanctioned genocide and have supported national policies that could end up killing us all. So the ultimate challenge for the man creature, us, you and me, is to learn how to become wise enough, fast enough, that we can compassionately employ consciousness that we have developed. And if we don't learn to compassionately employ it, the future is bleak. As the cartoon character Pogo once said, "We have met the enemy, and he is us." 1986, I developed Avatar as a set of experiential exercises that would let a person explore how their consciousness worked. And my intention was to coax a person to really look at consciousness without telling them what they should or shouldn't find. And really looking, as it turned out, was not as simple as it sounded. Consciousness is a non-physical singularity that records successive impressions of the external world along with successive impressions of its own activities. And it then sorts and categorizes these internal and external impressions according to their similarity and differences. But when you focus consciousness on itself, you start a resorting and recategorizing process. And this loop creates additional content from what is already stored. This is the process called thinking. And the only way that you can look at consciousness without it automatically cycling into resorts and recategorizations is to do it from a place outside of consciousness. You have to be out of your mind to stop thinking. Which may confirm some of the suspicions you've had about me. If you think of your mind as containing a lot of data storage rooms, for example, one door is labeled elephant. Now, the label elephant is a concept. And when you open the door to the elephant room, you encounter the specific impressions you have of elephants. And there's also a door labeled with the concept consciousness, behind which you would expect to encounter the specific impressions you have of consciousness. There's a funny thing. The problem is that when you open this door labeled consciousness, it opens into a space where you are looking at a door labeled consciousness. Exploring consciousness with consciousness is surreal. It's also a dead end. Fortunately, there is a subtler quality of life that we call undefinable awareness. And it can watch consciousness without automatically creating more consciousness. And I stress automatically because undefinable awareness can create consciousness, but it does so deliberately and it's not compelled to. Some people call undefinable awareness spirit. In Avatar, we typically refer to an individual share of undefinable awareness as source viewpoint or source beingness. And there are at least two types of viewpoints. First, there's the viewpoint that comes with all of its baggage, definitions, conclusions, assumptions, judgments, expectations, memories, stories. And then there's a viewpoint that doesn't come with any baggage. And both of these viewpoints think of themselves as I and are addressed as you, but they're not the same. The viewpoint without the baggage is the one that we're most interested in. It is sufficiently disengaged from consciousness that it can watch without automatically starting a resort and a recategorization. Now, one of the first insights that almost anyone practicing meditation has is that there is a quiet viewpoint that can watch consciousness, a witness viewpoint. And the longer that you watch from this witness viewpoint, the more established you become in it. And this is spiritual awakening. Instead of existing as a conscious viewpoint or ego with all of its baggage, you begin to exist as a viewpoint that maintains some distance on your own consciousness. And in this case, distance is really an attitude of allowance, acceptance of what is, and a non-attachment to definition. And the process of getting from the first viewpoint with all of its baggage to the second viewpoint is called a spiritual path. And it can be streamlined like Avatar, or it can be very complex and convoluted with many pitfalls and wrong turns. Now, in the early 20th century, physics became a much more interesting subject with the introduction of quantum theory. And quantum theory, in my opinion, is the tip-over point between the study of matter as composed of energy and the study of matter as composed of consciousness. At least that's the way I like to look at it. To the traditional physicist, the most bizarre premise of quantum theory is that the very act of watching changes what is being observed. Now, the premise was experimentally demonstrated in 1998 at the Weizmann Institute in Israel, and these additional phenomena were noted. To affect a change, the watching has to be done by a live person. Otherwise, a mechanical device measuring doesn't create any change. And also, the more watching by a live person, in terms of concentration and duration, the greater the change produced. And at first I thought, wow, science, that's incredible. Then I remembered, we used to vaporize little whiffs of clouds. Some people call it cloud busting. You pick out a little piece of cloud and you make it disappear. Probably it's changing the temperature of the water by your concentrated awareness. And also, have you ever felt when someone was looking at you? Actual observation, looking at someone, can actually create a very slight temperature rise. So the Avatar materials really began to unfold with this question: can the watcher viewpoint do anything other than watch? And of course, as soon as I stopped watching and started resorting and recategorizing my experiences with this question, I was swept back into thinking. But the answer was yes. Some things can be changed in specific ways according to how the watcher watches. The Sirius drill is an example. Now, the watcher also has the power to decide. So I decided, as long as I was meditating to feel good anyway, I decided to be happy. And that's the story behind the first primary on the source list. I am happy to be me. And watching my mind react to that decision, I am happy to be me, is of course where the concept of secondaries developed. Now, without going into a detail, a secondary is something that is in disagreement with your primary decision. And so when you decide, I am happy to be me, consciousness parades past you all the definitions, conclusions, assumptions, judgment, memories, expectations, stories, so on, that disagree with your statement. Now, this happens because the nature of consciousness, when it is directed at itself, is to go into a reshuffle of sorting and categorizing. And in this case, my mind was trying to validate the statement, I am happy to be me. But there is a difference between a statement and a decision. I am happy to be me begins as a statement, but the goal is for it to become a decision. And the way you do that is just abide in this watcher, witness, source viewpoint, whatever you want to call it, and watch the secondaries as they appear and vaporize them. And again, we're essentially changing something by how we look at it. Dramatizing the secondary opens up a distance between the watcher, witness, source viewpoint, and your stream of consciousness. And finally, the only thought in consciousness is, I am happy to be me. No disagreements. And guess what? At that point, the statement has turned into a decision, and it is exactly what you experience. You have created a personal reality by moving from a conscious viewpoint with all of its baggage, which is making a statement, into a source viewpoint that is making a decision. That is a deliberate type 4 belief. And you got there by vaporizing all the disagreements that your consciousness threw up. Pretty cool, don't you think? Every primary is a spiritual journey. So there is some more background on the source list and source viewpoint. If you look at the other primaries on the source list, you will notice that they are all statements which, when turned into decisions, will strengthen the power of source viewpoint to stay awake and decide. A source viewpoint is a non-physical presence or beingness which is independent of time, location, independent of motion. And it's sufficiently disengaged from your own consciousness that you can even watch emotion without becoming agitated. It is the real you. It's not a stripped-down mental copy of what you thought someone else was like. That is an identity. And identities, no matter how much time and effort you put in on them, never evolve into spirits. A spirit or source viewpoint occupies a here that is really outside of everything. It's true that it can choose to identify with any creation or any identity, any expression of consciousness, but ultimately with the realization, this is not I, the identification will be revealed as nothing more than a decision. So what is source being source of? Only this, your deliberate decisions. And honestly, for most of us, not every decision we make is deliberate. So not everything in the mind is created from a source viewpoint. There are a lot of impressions flowing in from the world, other people's beliefs, thoughts, imaginings, more thoughts, communications, little trophies of flattery, and scars of insults. The mind is a busy place. And it's only during those moments when you operate from a source viewpoint that you can say that you're living deliberately. And in those moments, you shape your life. When source viewpoint is not awake, consciousness will either behave in habitual ways or in response to outside influences. And the outside influence may be good or bad, for your benefit or for your ruin. Traffic lights are outside influences that are for your benefit. Abra. Taking advice from an angry man might not be to your benefit. And some influences are not obvious. Peer pressure, television, broadcast news, video games, and so on. Let me show you how a lot of people get lost. This is a little exercise that will require some concentration on your part. Look in your mind about a foot behind your head and find a blue donut-like shape. Now, it may be vague at first. It's about a foot behind your head in mental space. There is a blue donut shape. Okay, some of you found it already. Good. Let me help the rest of you. Look about eye level in your mental space, about a foot back, for a blue donut shape. Now, the more aware you are, the quicker you will find it. How many of you have found it? Now, the important thing about this is that the shape must be blue. Make sure the shape is blue. How many of you found blue? Good. Now, there are people who have red donuts. And they're trouble and they should be avoided. Now, if your donut is blue, you'll be okay. And if you found it's red, you need to turn it to blue. And by the way, if you're interested, we're starting a course tomorrow on how to turn your donut blue. That guy over there looks a little suspicious to me. Could someone please check the color of his donut? Of course, this is just for fun. And I influenced your mind to imagine a blue donut. Yes, I did that. And the more attention that you put on it, the more real it will become. And over time, it could become so real that you would actually go to war with guys who were influenced into imagining a red donut. I mean, as far as I know, human beings are the only species that will kill each other over something that someone else influenced them to imagine. Can be a dangerous world, friends. When Buddha was instructing his followers in the right use of language, the right use of speech, he was addressing them as source beings, not as bodies or identities. In his parable of the saw, he described 5 right uses of speech and 5 wrong uses of speech. The 5 right uses are to speak at the right time, to speak truly, to speak without complaint, to say something that is profitable to the listener and to use kind words. And the wrong use of speech are to speak at the wrong time, to speak falsely, to complain, to say something that wastes the listener's time, or to speak critically. Now, Buddha taught that this choice of how to speak could always be self-controlled by the disciple, deliberate, not as a response to the world. And to emphasize this fact, he told them that if robbers used a two-handed saw to cut off both their arms and their legs, they should not take offense or violate the rules of right speech. Now, if you're identified with a body, in the course of having your limbs sawn off, you might slip in a complaint or a harsh word. I think I might. But if you're established in the viewpoint of Source Being has no arms or legs to lose, and you can still choose to deliberately speak kindly to the bastards who are sawing your limbs off. It's a parable, a story used to illustrate a spiritual lesson. And the lesson is that when you are established, meaning identified on a firm basis, in the viewpoint of Source Being, nothing can make you act in any way that you don't decide to act. I mean, nothing can touch you. Nothing can cause you pain. Nothing can influence you unless you let it. Now, on the responsibility scale, that's way up there. And you can't say, well, she made me say it, or I said it because I was angry, or I said it because you deserved it. And if you do experience a loss of source viewpoint and you slip in a few cuss words, there is something that you can say to get another turn. Honey, I'm sorry. You maintain control of your life by taking responsibility for anything that shows up in your consciousness. And it doesn't matter how it shows up in your consciousness. It doesn't matter if it's because of fate or karma or bad choices or injustice. I mean, you remain in that place where you can speak kindly even if someone is sawing off your arms. And you see, Avatar is not just about making you stronger. It's about reminding you that you are omnipotent sources. And instead of being subject to judgments and fears, limitations, or the inevitable suffering that befalls all creatures, a source being can willingly experience anything and recover control of life. And now before you run off screaming, I can do anything, nothing can touch me. Let me emphasize that I've been talking about a personal relationship that you are creating with your own consciousness. And there is still a bigger picture, and it would be foolish for you not to consider it. Source viewpoint is the last frontier of individualized experience. Go beyond it and you will realize that everything that happens every blow that is struck, every blow that is received, are really the same blow. This is a broader awareness. If your right hand hits your left hand, do you experience delivering the blow or receiving the blow? Both, right? What you do to your idea of me happens to your idea of you. And what I do to my idea of you happens to my idea of me. And I'm not talking about abstract moral principles. I'm talking about a closed system. If I intend evil, evil befalls me. Now, this isn't the kind of karma where I hit you and then later someone hits me. I'm talking about an impersonal energy that is the essence of us both and that is as far beyond source beingness as source beingness is beyond consciousness. So it's better to create toward others something you would enjoy if you were in their shoes. Because you are. In the end, you will be happier practicing kindness than conquest. That's why Buddha's advice is to speak kindly no matter what the motivation not to. In the bigger picture, the lips that pass the harsh word and the ear that receives the harsh word are on the same head. And ultimately, life is a closed system. And cause and effect, winners and losers, are merely ripples upon one sea. Now, this is really a subject for the advanced courses. And the only reason that I bring up these higher states of being is I want you to know that even when you are in the viewpoint of Source, and are free of all of the indoctrinations of this world, there is still available to you an intuitive moral guidance that simply affirms that you will experience exactly what you create. The solution to the problems that the world is facing today will begin with a change in consciousness. You can do that. Teaching people to live deliberately, if only for a critical single moment in their lives, is the game that we're involved in. Thank you for playing this game with me. Thank you for the time.
For a powerful awareness booster, explore the Avatar Personal Integrity mini course. You can expect improved well-being, insights into attacks and disagreements, and a freeing of creative energy. Ask an Avatar Master or visit avatarepc.com.